welcome to whatever is lovely, true, and awesome. I'm your host, Samantha Grace. This is the podcast where I talk about uplifting stories from the news, profile migraine sufferers in the public eye, and share inspiring song lyrics / poetry / quotes. This podcast is for those of us who deal with chronic pain or anyone who wants to hear positive stories. This week, my awesome story comes from the art world. I don't know about you, but I really enjoy going to art museums. They're quiet, they're peaceful, they're calm. I love seeing the different ways the museums display their art. You know, I worked at a museum back when I was like 22 for a summer, and it was really cool getting to go behind the scenes, and like within a specific exhibition, they can move the walls. You know, they just totally, it's like a giant room, and then they put up walls, they paint the walls, they do the lighting a certain way. It's like kind of like you're a rat in a maze, and they're figuring out how they want you to move through and have a certain kind of experience with the lighting and, you know, the way they do everything. It's like the exhibit itself is part of the art. And there's nothing quite like seeing a favorite piece of art in person. And I didn't really understand that until I saw Salvador Dali's piece. It's an oil painting called The Persistence of Memory. And this is a ubiquitous piece. It's in our pop culture DNA. And it's a surrealist painting of a bunch of melting clocks. And they kind of look like oversized pocket watches that are all melty. And when you were 12, you probably saw this and thought, oh my gosh, what is this painting? That's so interesting and different. And, so when you see it in person, I was struck by how small it is. It's 9.5 inches by 13 inches. And it made me realize that Dali's brushes had to have been really tiny with not that many, you know, bristles or hairs in the brush for him to get that precise with his brush strokes. So I'm a big art geek. Museums are my thing. And with the quarantine, we can't go. So Google Arts and Culture has teamed up with over 2,500 galleries and art museums to offer virtual tours for anyone with an internet connection. Basically, it's a similar experience to Google Street View. So in Google Street View, you can like type in an address and it'll show you a picture of, you know, an image of the house at that address, the house or building. And then you can click on an arrow and you can like zoom down the street. You can do a 360, you can do a 180. And that's what it's like with this Google Arts and Culture approach that they're doing for the galleries. It's like you're walking around in the gallery and you can zoom in on a piece that you like. And if you use the Google Arts and Culture app, you get a more immersive experience. And then another option that we have is the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. If you text something like, send me trees to this number, 57521, then a bot will find a piece at the museum that has trees, and it will pick one piece of art and send it to you. Now, I'm sure there are lots of different pieces of art at the museum that have trees in them, but it'll pick one. And the museum, the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, has over 34,000 pieces in their collection, and on a regular day at that museum, only 5% of their collection is on view. So this is a really interesting way to experience some of those other pieces. And my sources for this information was goodnewsnetwork.org and two different articles written by McKinley Corbley. For the true section of the podcast, I'm focusing on two different migraine sufferers who had careers in the arts in the mid to late 1800s. So we've got painter George Seurat and writer Lewis Carroll. So Seurat was a French post-impressionist painter who came to success in the late 1800s. Wikipedia says, his large-scale work, A Sunday Afternoon on the Island of La Grande Jetée, altered the direction of modern art by initiating neo-impressionism and is one of the icons of late 19th century painting. So this painting really sticks in my mind because I saw it in person, but I just feel like in art history, we talked about this a lot, like in art appreciation when I was in college. So I was able to see the painting at the Art Institute of Chicago Museum, and it's huge. It's 81 inches by 121 inches, so almost 7 feet by 10 feet. And you've probably seen a flash of it somewhere. It portrays a scene of people sitting and standing under trees, and they're by the edge of a body of water. They're all facing to the left, so everybody's in profile. And there are women wearing hats with flowers on them. There's some dogs, a lot of parasols. You know, basically a parasol is like an umbrella, but just for the sun. So smaller than an umbrella, probably made of a different material. And the front part of the painting, the part closest to you, the foreground, is in shadow. And then the further back you go, you see the bright green grass, and the people sitting are casting long shadows as they face the left side of the painting, and the shadows stretch to the right side of the painting. It has a lot of green. The people's clothing has a lot of orangish, reddish, brownish hues. When you stand 10, 15 feet away from the painting, it just looks like it was done like a traditional painting. But when you get up close, you see the technique that the artist used is a technique called pointillism. So pointillism is when there are small, distinct dots of color applied in patterns to form an image. And I remember learning pointillism in like sixth grade art class. I would take a sheet of tracing paper and put it over an image I liked. Then I would take a fine point Sharpie marker and just dot, 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 dot to copy that image. I did a tracing of a zebra like that. And with the pen, the dots are very small. On the painting, the dots are bigger. On migraineagain.com, Angie Glosser says, it's rumored there are similarities between his art and a visual migraine aura. Some medical researchers refer to scotomata or scintillating aura as the Seurat effect. So they're saying that this certain kind of aura is similar to what he's portraying in the painting, and they're naming this kind of aura the Seurat effect. And auras are often a precursor to a migraine. It's, you know, some kind of visual disturbance. And in this certain kind of aura, one sees an irregular outline around a luminous patch in the visual field that occurs following mental or physical labor, eye strain, or during a migraine. So really, it's only his artistic style that causes doctors to conclude he may have had migraines. It's kind of a weak conclusion, right? Lots of artists had unique ways of portraying the world around them, and that didn't mean they had a neurological disease. They were just creative. So that's why I decided to pair Seurat with another creative person from the 1800s. It's kind of slim pickings when you're looking through all these different migraine websites trying to get more information about, you know, who has experienced this disease. It really opens your eyes up to the lack of information and also the lack of female representation. It's like, hello, I know there were people in, you know, before the 1900s, there were women who had migraines, but apparently history has just, you know, doesn't really record very many of them. So around the same time, Lewis Carroll was writing Alice's Adventures in Wonderland in England. And emilgauchman.com describes Lewis Carroll as the author of literary nonsense books like Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. In addition to his penmanship, he also did some works in the fields of mathematics and logic, and he was interested in photography, a new art branch of this era. That's interesting. I didn't know that about the mathematics and logic. So if you've ever read Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, it's just strange. I don't think that, you know, some people say, oh, he was high on drugs the entire time he wrote that. You know what? I think a lot of times when people are high on drugs, whatever they're writing makes absolutely no sense. His makes enough sense to get by. I don't think it has a very good narrative arc. There's lots of whimsy, lots of nonsense, lots of jumping around with the plot. It kind of felt like a letdown to read it. But then again, you have to think, I was looking at it through a 21st century lens. If I read other writers from the time period, maybe I would appreciate it better in a contextual way. It's like how with artwork, I don't really like Claude Monet's paintings, but I understand and respect his place in the Impressionist art movement. So that's kind of the conclusion I came to about how to judge his writings. I need more information, basically. So back to Lewis Carroll, there's actually a diary entry where he describes his first migraine and the preceding aura. MigrainePal.com, in an article by Carl Cincinnato, says, "Many people draw parallels with Alice's experience where the size of things around her appear to change, which has often been referred to as the Alice in Wonderland syndrome. When the brain affects the way objects are perceived, it is also known as micropsia and macropsia." At the 2020 Migraine World Summit, author and English professor Andrew Levy said this about Carroll's writings. "At the start of Alice in Wonderland, she's got the little cake that says, 'Eat me,' and the little bottle that says, 'Drink me.' And she partakes of both, and she becomes super big, and then she becomes super small. There are actually things that people have, that kind of neurological disruption, where they suddenly either feel like they're looking down on everything or that they're looking up at everything." That's the end of the quote. So in case you forgot again what aura is, Wikipedia describes aura as a perceptual disturbance experienced by someone with epilepsy or migraine. Epileptic and migraine auras are due to the involvement of specific areas of the brain, which are those that determine the symptoms of the aura. Therefore, if the visual area is affected, the aura will consist of visual symptoms, while if a sensory one, then sensory symptoms will occur. And there's this really famous British neurologist who is also a migraine sufferer, and his name is Oliver Sacks, and he says this about aura. "I was playing in the garden when a brilliant, shimmering light appeared to my left, dazzlingly bright, almost as bright as the sun. It expanded, becoming an enormous shimmering semicircle, stretching from the ground to the sky, with sharp zigzagging borders and brilliant blue and orange colors. Then, behind the brightness, came a blindness, an emptiness in my field of vision, and soon I could see almost nothing on my left side. I was terrified. What was happening? My sight returned to normal in a few minutes, but those were the longest minutes I had ever experienced." So, fortunately for young Oliver, his mother immediately recognized the condition. As a migraine sufferer herself and a trained physician, she could assure him he would soon be good as new. This was, you know, in the early 1900s. She explained he had experienced a sort of disturbance like a wave passing across a part of his brain that temporarily distorted his senses. So that kind of experience 500 years earlier may have been treated as some kind of heavenly interaction, or even more scary, someone could have misinterpreted that and thought it was an interaction with an evil spirit. So it's really lucky for Sax that he had his doctor mother to help him out. So in this profile, we've got Surratt with his Surratt effect, which is aura that disturbs your field of vision. And we've got Lewis Carroll with his Alice in Wonderland syndrome, which is an aura that disrupts how your brain relates to the objects around you. So although the info I can relate about Carroll and Surratt is pretty slim, it's still interesting to talk about these, you know, different kinds of aura and whether or not migraine affected their artistic creations. So that is all I have today about Surratt and Carroll. For the lovely part of the podcast, I have some different quotes from Alice in Wonderland, and these are mostly all from the Cheshire Cat. And if you haven't read the book, or haven't seen the Disney movie, or haven't seen the old mini series that they did on TV that was live action, the Cheshire Cat is this cat with a big mouth who just grins a lot, and he speaks in riddles a lot like a lot of the other characters in the story. So here's an exchange between the cat and Alice. Alice is starting to talk. "Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?" "That depends a good deal on where you want to get to," said the cat. "I don't much care where," said Alice. "Then it doesn't matter which way you go," said the cat. "As long as I get somewhere," Alice added as an explanation. "Oh, you're sure to do that," said the cat, "if you only walk long enough." And then in another part of the book, the cat and Alice are talking again. The cat keeps on reappearing everywhere that she goes. The cat comes up and says something kind of infuriating. "In that direction," the cat said, waving its right paw round, "lives a hatter. And in that direction," waving the other paw, "lives a March hare. Visit either you like. They're both mad." "But I don't want to go among mad people," Alice remarked. "Oh, you can't help that," said the cat. "We're all mad here. I'm mad. You're mad." "How do you know I'm mad?" said Alice. "You must be," said the cat, "or you wouldn't have come here." And then another exchange between the cat and Alice. The cat begins talking. "To begin with," said the cat, "a dog's not mad. You grant that?"
"I suppose so," said Alice.
"Well, then," the cat went on, "you see, a dog growls when it's angry and wags its tail when it's pleased. Now I growl when I'm pleased and wag my tail when I'm angry. Therefore, I'm mad."
"I call it purring, not growling," said Alice.
"Call it what you like," said the cat. And then my last quote, which I can't seem to figure out where exactly this comes from, if it's from Alice in Wonderland, but they just attribute it to Lewis Carroll. "I'm not strange, weird, off, nor crazy. My reality is just different from yours." I thought that was a really good quote to end on. I feel like it's particularly applicable right now with all of us going a little bit crazy while we self-isolate. And, you know, when you deal with chronic pain, that whether it's in remission or it's just continuing to go on, your reality is very different. Every moment of your day is very different than the average person. person who doesn't have chronic pain. So it's always good to put your life into context. And also remember that comparison is the thief of joy. Comparison is the thief of joy. I believe that's one of the sayings, you know, not to compare yourself and to acknowledge, you know, that we all have our own circumstances. So I hope everyone is doing well. I stuck to what I said, and I'm releasing another episode on a Friday. So that's two Fridays that I've got work out, and then I have two more Fridays to go. And the next episode, I will be focusing on a female politician. And I chose to talk about her because I find it really interesting the limitations that she comes up against as a woman in office and a woman who struggles with migraine. So in the meantime, take care of yourself. Thank you.